Well, thanks for the invitation to speak at this conference. It feels a little bit weird because the place at the other end used to be my permanent home for many years. And I guess right now, this is what it is. So it's kind of strange. Also feels, yeah, a little bit strange that the people over there have to hear this talk through an intercontinental link where my co-author is sitting right there on the front row. But hi, Yuri. Anyway, what I'm going to talk about, which I hope does in some way fit with the general theme of the conference, I'm not sure, is based on this this recent work together with Yuri Manin. And it has to do with various, again, kind of a long-standing kind of a theme, and none which is various forms of geometry below spec Z, which means sort of this idea that there should be a kind of field with one element underlying this type of geometry. And so I will mention, point in the talk, some other previous stuff, more or less on related themes, and especially the point of view that I'm going to be discussing in this talk relies a lot on recent work of Ina Zakarevich on a kind of homotopy theory approach to Grothendieck rings, it is, and so on. And so we'll see how this point of view can be incorporated into this set of ideas around F1 geometry. And so what is this story about the field with one element? So at the origin, it's really like a kind of consistency behavior of the counting of points over finite fields. So just as a simple example, if you take a projective space or a Grassmannian over a finite field and you count the number of points, these end up being nicely expressible in terms of some kind of Q analog form, when you think of this Q as the cardinality of the field as a kind of a formal variable. And then, it was originally Jacques Titz who observed that if you take a limit as Q goes to one, you can formally think that, finite sets would replace of a given cardinality would replace a projective space, and sets of subsets of a fixed cardinality would replace Grassmannian. And it kind of started this idea that maybe there's some more elaborate examples, but that whenever you have a certain kind of consistency condition over the counting of points over finite fields at different primes, there should be some kind of limit as when you treat the form of variable 2 goes to 1 that has its own form of algebraic geometry behind it. And this idea was enriched in various ways. So one thing that I will play a role in the point of view that I'll be discussing is a proposal in an old unpublished paper of Kapranov and Smirnov that one, in the same way in which FP has its extensions of Q to powers of P, there's something like extensions of F1. Of course, F1 itself doesn't quite make sense, but you can sort of think of that in terms of finite sets with actions of groups of roots of unity. And so you formally think that the change of variable from F1 to Z that correspond to taking these extensions would be giving rise to this type of polynomial rings. So you see that as the action of groups of roots of unity involved. And the other is that, so in a sense, the one of the main themes behind this point of view is, roughly speaking, that roots of unity point, cyclotomic points, roots of unities, to play a role analogous to counting points over finite fields, in a sense. And so, for example, if you have a variety that's polynomially countable, so the number of points behaves like a polynomial in Q, then the counting of points over these extensions of one should be the values of polynomial at n plus one, which if you think of it is would be, if your variety decomposes in a nice way into tori, would be the counting of roots of unities in each of these tori. That's one way of seeing what this means. So this can all look like some kind of coincidences or a strange numerology. But you know, another aspect of it that has been motivating the idea of developing some kind of algebraic geometry over this mysterious F1 is the fact that like to understand in a better way when you have L functions of algebraic varieties, you have the the contribution of the finite places. And those are well understood in terms of there's a Frobenius that acts on a suitable cohomology theory, and you're looking at that as an interpretation of what the contribution of the finite primes should be. But then there's some contribution of the Archimedean primes, which is usually in terms of some kind of gamma functions. And these should, in a sense, be some replacement of the Frobenius acting on appropriate cohomology over these this underlying F1 geometry. So these are some of the motivating aspects. Now, there's been a lot of developments of various points of view of how to try to make sense of an algebraic geometry over F1. And there's one that back to some work of Soulet, which is based on cyclotomic points. I'll say a little bit more later. There's one by Borger, which is based on lambda ring structures. And there's one that's based on thinking of the sphere spectrum as being what's underlying spec Z. And that was probably developed by Toen and Laclair. So this led to slightly different versions of what it means, for example, for a variety that's defined over Z to have an F1 structure, so to descend to F1. And not all of them are equivalent. And in some stronger forms, for a variety that's defined over Z, having a structure over F1 is very close to just being a toric variety. So a lot of these versions only allow for varieties that are very close to being toric varieties. Other are more general and allow for a larger classes of varieties. So they're not entirely equivalent. There's a survey article that tries to map the relations between all these various points of view on F1 geometry, and I recommend that if you're curious about seeing more of that. So I will actually focus only on some very particular aspects of F1 geometry in this talk. And in particular, I will look back at some earlier work that I've done with Conan Consani some years ago that reinterprets these extensions of F1 of Kapranov and Smirnov in terms of a certain dynamical system, which has its origins in some models of quantum statistical mechanics applied to number theory, which is the integral Boscon system. And I'll try to make a connection between that and a point of view based on spectra and homotopy, slightly more homotopy theoretic point of view. And also, we'll discuss another proposal for how to view a possibility of saying what it means to have an F1 structure, which is based more on something like dynamical zeta functions and endomorphism of varieties. So let me say quickly a little bit, go quickly through a little bit of background. This is actually based on this earlier work on F1 geometry and on Soulet's point of view. So already several years ago, Soulet proposed a way of saying what it means for a variety over Z to have an F1 structure. And the key idea was, in his point of view, the fact that cyclotomic points of this variety should play an important role in defining what an F1 structure means. And so it basically built what he calls gadgets over F1, which would be a combination of an algebra over the complex numbers and a functor from rings to sets, which would correspond to cyclotomic points and some compatibility between them, with the fact that showing that varieties over Z define such objects. So we don't go through too much many details, but I just wanted let me just go directly to the example that is relevant to my point of view, which is connected to this quantum statistical mechanical system of Boscon. So I'll come back in a moment to how this relates to this Soulet point of view. So this is an algebra, a non-commutative algebra that has some kind of time evolution and equilibrium states and so on. So as an algebra, it's just a group ring of QMOZ, so just the group of abstract roots of unities, and an action of the multiplicative semigroup of the integers, which basically, it's endomorphism of the roots of unity that take a root of unity and rises to some power. And you have its form, so partial inverses whenever you can divide, you have something that is divisible by n. So these are basically the partial inverses of the rising to a power. Okay. And the time evolution is a very simple one, which fixes this abelian subalgebra and actually rotates by a phase this semigroup action. And this is designed so that the partition function is the Riemann zeta function. And the equilibrium states at low temperature are polylogs evaluated at the roots of unity, normalized by the Riemann zeta function. And at zero temperature, the natural symmetries of this algebra intertwine with the Galois action on roots of unities. And so this gave rise to all different type of questions, which I'm not going to be talking about today, but which is how much one can realize this type of abelian class field theory for other number fields in this context of quantum statistical mechanical system with equilibrium states and Galois and symmetries implementing the Galois group action. But I mean, for today, I'll just stick to the case of Q, which is the one that has connections to this F1 point of view. So there's a slight modification of the algebra, which makes it gives an integral model. And of course, you have kind of do some modifications so that you avoid these denominators, basically. So you don't only have it's not exactly a semigroup action anymore, but it's the algebra generated by the integral group ring and certain operations, which again, you have these endomorphisms which are rising roots of unities to a power n, and then you have something that behaves like these partial inverses, but it's not. Those are not ring homomorphism anymore in this integral. Okay. They become ring homomorphism when you tensor with Q as before. And so one can think of what this algebra means from this F1 point of view as being a way of organizing the roots of unities together as these extensions of F1. In a way that so it's compatible with the data that Soulet described as defining a variety over F1. And also these endomorphisms that act on the roots of unity, they just become essentially lifts of the Frobenius in the sense that so there's a way of reducing this algebra mod P. And so there's some positive characteristic versions of this Boscan algebra that are obtained that way. And this semigroup action just becomes the Frobenius for all P. So in a sense, it's a lift. You can think of it as a Frobenius action on these extensions of F1 that is compatible with the Frobenius on DFQ at all the electrons. Okay, so this was, in a sense, the background story. So one can think of this algebra as a simple model of this tower of extensions of F1 with a compatible good notion of Frobenius. So this is what, in a sense, we're going to categorify in this picture and connect to this point of view on Grothendieck rings and spectra. So the first step is to lift from this algebra to some version of the Grothendieck ring of varieties. So the Grothendieck ring of varieties is considered the usual thing. You have isomorphism classes of varieties as generators with these excision properties, so the scissor congruence relation for closed subvarieties, and with the Cartesian product as the product. And so in a sense, this is just a universal Euler characteristic for algebraic varieties. Anything that behaves like an Euler characteristic is going to factor through these Grothendieck rings. So things like the topological Euler characteristics, you have varieties over C, for example, the counting of points over finite fields, or other slightly more elaborate forms of Euler characteristics, all factor through the Grothendieck ring. And so we're going to pick a version of the Grothendieck ring, which incorporates this fact that we want to keep track of roots of unities acting, because that's where the F1 structure is going to be built in, by having certain counting of cyclotomic points. So we want some equivariant version of the Grothendieck ring. Normally, what one means by G-equivariant Grothendieck ring is generated by varieties that have a good G-action, meaning that each orbit is contained in some affine open subsets, and the scissor congruent relations also have to be only the ones that are compatible with the group action. Right. So you require that the inclusions of the closed and open complementary inclusions are G equivariant. And you have the diagonal action of the product. And so in particular, we want the action of roots of unities. And so what you mean in this case is varieties that have an action of Z hat, which factors through some finite quotient and is a good action of some cyclic group. So there is if you take this Grothendieck ring, there is a natural equivariant Euler characteristic, which is just remembering the representation. So it's just mapping to finite dimensional representations of, and there's various ways to define or do this. I mean, you can, if you have a simplicial where the action of the group is, you can decompose and look at the action on the skeleton and define the Euler characteristics that way. There are several equivalent definitions of this, but basically that's the essence. And in particular, because the group that we're looking at is Z hat, so this ring is just the group ring of Q mod Z. Yeah. And so the first of simple observation is that here you have these endomorphism, which are the ones of this Boscon system, and they do lift two endomorphism here that are compatible with this equivariant Euler characteristic. And so you do get a semi-group action of the multiplicative group of the positive integers on this equivariant Grothendieck ring. And basically the idea of how to lift this map is simply that, this map is, these endomorphisms are the one that drives roots of unities to some power. So they just change the action by precomposing the action with that endomorphism of Q mod Z. It's the only natural thing you can do. And then the corresponding partial inverses of this action are in a sense, so the idea behind this is that you have one map that is like Frobenius in the sense that it's rising to some power. And so if you want to invert that map, you do something like the Verschiebung as a way to invert Frobenius. So with the matrix, you would put the matrix that has permutations, okay, and then the map. Right, so that would be like taking an nth root of the map. F. So you do it geometrically here by picking a variety that has n points and the action that's permuting, and at the same time incorporating the action alpha on x. Right? It's like the Verschiebung map made geometric in this way. And so this gives you two maps that have the same compatibility relation, two maps that are defined on this Grothendieck equivariant Grothendieck ring, and I have the same kind of relations that you have. So these are the analog of these relations when you look at the induced map on the group ring, and they correspond to that in this geometric setting. And okay, if there's some slight variance in the sense that, for example, if you take varieties defined over Q, which is more natural if you're thinking in terms of one structures rather than defined over C, there's a slight difference here in the sense that this is now just a subring, And it's a subring that's generated by certain elements, which are the images of the cyclotomic field when you view them as Q vector spaces. And but the point is that this is fine because this is exactly the range of these maps, rho tilde on the Boscon algebra. So that's exactly the part that you need in order to be able to lift the maps. So it's still fine. And so you can, this just means that, you can repackage the same statement by saying that you can lift you can extend this equivariant Euler characteristic to a morphism of algebra from this kind of a semi-group action on this equivariant Grothendieckring to the usual Boscon algebra. And, okay, so at this point, before I move to the next step, at this point we are just sort of lifted, this structure that we had here, we had just lifted it here at the level of Grothendieckring of varieties. Now, we want to lift it to something that's more homotopy theoretic, and the idea is that there is an actual homotopy theory construction behind the Grothendieckring of varieties, and so you want to use that to lift this whole structure at that level. So the idea is to that one has a spectrum in the homotopy theoretic sense whose homotopy groups, in particular the zeroth homotopy group, is the K0 of the Grothendieckring varieties. So, it's customary to use symmetric spectra as models of spectra because they have the correct kind of good definition of structure, which will become useful in the construction. And so, you think of pointer spaces or pointer spatial sets with structure maps and the equivariance conditions, and additional multiplication maps if it's a ring spectrum with the corresponding associativity and unit diagrams and commutative diagrams if they are commutative ring spectra. And spectra have corresponding homotopy groups, and they are built essentially with the purpose of realizing think of them as generalized homology theories. So the construction, as I mentioned, the point is this recent work of Nina Zakharevich. The construction of a spectrum underlying Grothendieckrings of varieties is through this idea of assembler categories. So these are categories where the key structure is the fact of having this kind of disjoint, disjoint morphism and this type of covering families. So these are endowed with a Grothendieck topology, and you look for a collection of morphism that satisfy this covering condition. So the key idea one should take out of this formulation is that what this formalism is trying to build is an abstract form of system congruence relations. So you want these collections to become the pieces of the type of system congruence relation that you would like to obtain in the K0. In the pi zero in the spectrum. So, the idea would be that if you know what is the type of Grothendieckring that you want to categorify in this way, you try to build a category with this property so that you build an appropriate collection of morphism that becomes the pieces of your Sisler congruence relation in the Grothendieckring set. So the step from having an assembler category to a spectrum goes by associating another category to an assembler category, which is the one that actually encodes the type of scissor congruence relations that you want to have realized, which is basically obtained by, so what you do is you construct a map that takes finite pointed sets, so the functors from finite pointed sets, to the nerve of this category of scissor congruence relations applied to copies of this assembler indexed by the finite set. Okay. So this really the packaging what you want your abstract scissor congruence relations to be. That will become the correct one once in the Groton decaying. And the point, there's a further step in here, which is the fact that this construction is building a functor for pointed sets to, let's say, simplicial sets. We're taking the nerves of this category with certain properties. And what you want to say is that any functor like this is going to automatically produce a spectrum. And this is a fact that goes back to a construction of Siegel on gamma spaces, which essentially tells you exactly that if you have a certain type of functors from the category of pointed sets to pointed simplicial sets, and you can extend it to an endofunctors of pointed simplicial sets, basically by skeleta. And then you construct a spectrum by evaluating these on the spheres as simplicial sets. And so this construction, starting from an assembler category and this category of scissor congruence relations associated to that, gives you one of these gamma spaces in the sense of Siegel. So it produces a spectrum. And the spectrum is produced so that the corresponding pi zero, because of the way that this category is encoding this scissor congruence relation, is exactly realizing those relations. Okay. So one of the main application of this construction, which was to construct an assembler that whose spectrum has pi zero equal to the usual Grothendieck of varieties. So we just want a slightly modified version of this, which is the one that incorporates this z hat action, and then lift everything to that this kind of F1 Frobenius structure to this level. And so again, what is the objects of these assembler categories are going to be varieties with good z hat action that factors through some finite level. And the Grothendieck topology is generated by these pairs of closed and complementary open embeddings that are equivariant with respect to the action. And the same type of maps that we've seen at the level of the Grothendieck ring, just changing the z-hat action and using this kind of Fersheboom map, geometrization of Fersheboom map, will actually become endofunctors of this assembler category. So they will induce the maps on the Grothendieck ring that we've seen before. And one sees that there's the same structure of these integral Boscon algebra, where these maps are compatible with the monoidal structure, and so they actually become ring homomorphism on the K0, and these ones are not compatible with the monoidal structure, and they only give rise to group homomorphism on the K0 level. And the one can also say, okay, the Euler characteristic itself that uses to lift this. So I mean this by itself already tells you that there's a compatible lift of the of this Boscon structure, this Frobenius structure and extensions of F1. But you can also see that the equivariant Euler characteristic itself can be lifted at this level. You can think of it this way. The equivalent Euler characteristic, you can normally think of it as going to the representation, but you can also stop at this intermediate step, which is the Burnside ring, which you can think of as the Grothendieck ring of G sets. And so in the, and okay, Zakharevich has also shown this, is, I think it's not published yet, but that there is an assembler construction for almost finite G-sets, which is what you need if you want to go to the case of Z-hat, because you have to take this kind of projective limit. So it's a Grothendieck ring of almost finite set. And then you can just directly see at the level of assemblers that, you know, this Euler characteristic map, it is definable as a functor of the corresponding assembler categories that induces the map. And yeah, another slight variant of this story is, so there's, you can think of a possible refinement of the Grothendieck ring of varieties, which is based on thinking of, in terms of birational equivalence of varieties, which is this was proposed recently by Konsevich and Schinkel, this type of Burnside ring of varieties up to birational equivalence. And so the idea here is that the type of equivalence relation that you take, so instead of having, you know, decomposition like a closed embedding and its open complement, you want to just have equivalence relations where you identify a variety or a dense open subset. Okay. So you want things up to birational equivalence. So the difference, it becomes the fact that, you know, you can again construct an assembler. Now the objects are, you know, you just look at, well, you can think of the object as being smooth varieties with good Z-hat action, but now you only look at the open embeddings as morphism rather than the closed ones as well. And then the what you get as the corresponding pi zero of the associated spectrum is this ring proposed by Konsevich and Schinkel, where you're only imposing these the only scissor congruence relations are really this identification of with an open density set. And the thing is that, you know, as they observe, this ring is related to the Grothendieck ring in the sense that it maps to the filtration by the grading of the filtration by dimension of varieties of the Grothendieck ring. And that map also lifts at the level of assemblers because, you know, yes, again, there's a, in Zakharevich's work, there is this a notion of an epimorphic assembler with sinks. So this, just say quickly what this is. So first, a small observation. If you have a group, you can construct an assembler associated to that, which just has two objects, you know, an initial object and another object. And you have only one morphism between them, this, and then you have morphism, invertible morphism of this object, which are just a group. Okay. And then what you get is a spectrum, which is actually just the spectrum of the classifying space of G. And so this will come in a second. It's what is meant by assembly with sinks is an assembly that has an object that has morphism from everything, and but with the property that if that source is not initial, these are epimorphism, and then the single morphism sets are covering families in this sense. So. And if you have any two non-initial objects, this morphism can never be disjoint. And if you think about it, moment, it's kind of clear that if you fix a variety and you only look at these kind of dense open embeddings, then you get one of these assemblers with sink. Okay, this is just going to be the sink. And these sort of have the right properties. So this means, let me say a moment why that's relevant. One last thing about these general properties that Zakharevich proved about assembly with sinks. So she showed that if you have an assembly with sinks, there's a way to associate a group to it, and therefore, you know, a spectrum on this form. So the group is coming from looking at pairs of morphism from non-initial objects, and we're up to an equivalence relation, which is, you know, having compositions, well, having another object maps. And the composition in the group is given by, you know, composing two of these diagrams by a common, you know, like pullback-like diagram. It's not necessarily pullback, but it's unique up to this equivalence relation. So it's the composition is well defined. And the point is that is if you have one of these assemblers with sync, you look at the corresponding group constructed this way and the corresponding spectrum associated to the group. And there is a morphism of assembler, which is an equivalence on K-theory. And so the point is that you can, if you know that your assembler can be built out of these assemblers with sync, then you can describe pretty explicitly what its homotopy type is in terms of this object here, this spectrum here. And so coming back to this this Concevi-Schinkel Bernstein ring. Yes, because of what I said, that if you fix one variety and you look only at the dense open embeddings, you get one of these assemblers with sync. You can decompose it as a co-product of this type of assemblers with syncs. And the corresponding K-theory will correspond to these automorphism groups, which are, you know, the birational automorphism that are equivariant with respect to the z-hat action. And so in this way, you can view this relation between this Bernstein ring and the gradings of the usual bidimension of the usual growth and decaying of varieties at this spectra level. Because, you know, if you fix a dimension and then you look only at those, you know, the birational isomorphism classes of a fixed dimension, with the isomorphism compatible with the group action, you can decompose this in as a coproduct of these assemblers with syncs. And there's this goes back to a similar argument that Karevich has proved for the non-equivariant cases, that these things actually end up being, you know, the relation, the natural relation between the spectra associated to these assemblers, where you only pick varieties of dimension up to n. So these are kind of, I mean, this is like these graded pieces of the growth and decaying, of the filtration of the growth and decaying by dimension. Okay, so this is one you know, way to kind of categorify this type of F1 structures based on this idea of Kapranov and Smirnov of extensions of F1. And I want to say a little bit more about some other related aspects. So here's another possible, you know, suggestion of viewpoint about what it means to have an F1 structure, which is kind of going in a somewhat different direction. But I'll come back to see some connection. So one of the basic tenets of whatever you want to, you know, declare as your preferred kind of way of thinking about F1. It should be based, in a sense, on replacing the Frobenius action at a finite prime with something that, you know, morally should behave in a similar way. And then that something should, in some sense, involve roots of unity. So that's the kind of slogan of the whole story. And then you try to patch these ideas together in all the possible ways that you can come up with. And so one way is to say, okay, you know, there is something that kind of has this feeling in geometry, which is this type of Morse-Mill diffeomorphisms. And these are just living in the world of compact smooth manifolds. So for the moment, we're momentarily leaving the world of algebraic varieties, and we're coming back to it in a moment. But so you have some diffeomorphism of a compact smooth manifold, and they have this type of non-wandering properties. And so you say that if they have this non-wandering, you know, they have a finite number of non-wandering points, and they are stable in the sense that they're isotopic to themselves under sufficiently small deformations, then they have this property this is the part that's going to be relevant, that the induced map on homology is quasi-unipotent and eigenvalues, that it has only eigenvalues that are roots of unit. And okay, so this you can say, you can look at varieties that carry some kind of endomorphism with these properties. So with a quasi-unipotent action on the homology. And so it means, you can think of this homology as a module over this algebra. And okay, you can form a kind of Grothendieck ring out of these objects again. And the spectrum that will lift this to a spectrum in the homotopy theoretic sense. And you again have a map to ZQ mod Z, which now is just coming from the fact that we know this map has this action on the homology has eigenvalues that are roots of unities. So you have a formal sum with multiplicities of the eigenvalues, which is an element here and is well behaved with respect to operations. And again, you can lift this Boscombe structure. Now you literally have this Frobenius and Verschiebung map on the homology thing this way. And you can have the same type of Boscombe relation coming from the fact that this rising to power, from Frobenius type map of rising to power and Verschiebung map have this type of commutativity relation, which is exactly giving you the correct relations between these maps. And so this spectrum in the operator theoretic sense is like an Euler characteristic map in this setting. And you have this, you can again lift these structures, kind of Frobenius-like structures here to the level of this Grothendieck ring. And yeah, so here, of course, there's something that happened, the spectrum in now the homotopy theoretic sense is not as interesting as in these cases of Grothendieck rings of varieties, because if you want your spectrum in the operator theoretic sense to behave well with respect to the operation, then you're kind of forced to take splitting relations in this Grothendieck ring only disjoint union things, because the homology has to split, and so then the corresponding spectrum become topologically very simple in this case. But so there's some other aspect of the idea of using this dynamical point of view on F1 geometry, which links it to another point of view on F1 geometry, which is the one of lambda rings. And I probably won't have much time to say about this, but let me say a few words. So the idea behind this Borger point of view on what you want to intend as F1 geometry is the fact that, lambda ring structures are typically the type of structure that's satisfied by characteristic classes, varieties, and sort of Adams operations, that type of structure. And basically, what really you can think of as a lambda ring is doing for you is producing lifts of Frobenius. So operations that when you reduce the mod P, behave like Frobenius. So it's still the same idea, in a different viewpoint. And so you can think of, what Borger suggested is that having a lambda ring structure is a kind of descent data for a ring from Z to F1, because it provides some kind of compatibility of the Frobenius in that way. And so in particular, there's a way to see this structure in this Boscombe algebra by taking this reduction mod P and verifying that the endomorphisms that we were looking at are actually a lift of Frobenius exactly in this lambda ring sense of Borges. And in fact, one can sort of extend this more generally to some kind of higher dimensional things, which pretty much go through in the same way. And I'm only mentioning this because you know, Borger showed that, in fact, this type of lambda ring structure that occurs on these powers of the group ring of Q-mod Z is universal in some sense. So every at least for torsion-free case, a torsion-free lambda ring can be embedded in one of these. So in a sense, that's a good model for. And so the ideas behind this dynamic point of view on F1 structures, you have a quasi-unipotent endomorphism of an algebraic variety, is to associate to that a lambda ring. You can associate to that a lambda ring in this Borger sense. So I'm not too many details. Okay, so this is kind of still a bit of work in progress there, but I can say just two words about it. There is a more sort of, in a sense, hands-on and more direct way of thinking about F1 geometry, which was proposed by Lopez Peña and Lorschei some years ago, which again is based on this idea that this counting of points over F1 is in a sense a counting of cyclotomic points. And so the idea from this point of view is to say that the minimal requirement for having a meaningful F1 structure on a variety over Z is that you can do this kind of counting of cyclotomic points. If you think of the counting of points being something that's defined on the Grothendieck ring, like the usual counting of points is a homomorphism from the Grothendieck ring. So what would make a good counting of cyclotomic points would be for the class in the Grothendieck ring to decompose as a sum of classes of tori with non-negative coefficients, because then you're just counting the roots of unities in each torus. And so that's like the most basic structures. That's just the class in the Grothendieck ring has this kind of decomposition. This, however, can happen in a non-geometric way, in the sense that you could have that the class in the Grothendieck ring decomposes in this nice way, but it doesn't correspond to the variety itself having a decomposition into tori. So there's like a more geometric form, which is actually requiring that you have a decomposition of the variety into tori, which will imply, in particular, the property of the class in the Grothendieck ring. And then you can make it stronger and stronger by requiring that the tori are, this decomposition of tori is nicer in some way. And this is the most basic form where you just have a decomposition of the class into tori, and that actually is the minimum that you need in order to be able to do this counting of points in a way that gives you something that's so this gives you back the usual examples that have been known from the beginning of this whole F1 geometry story. And the geometric step is to actually require that the variety itself splits into tori, and then you can make, as I said, stronger requirements about how the tori should be. So, for example, if you have varieties that have good cell decompositions, they usually are here, but they're not always here. If you take toric varieties, they are in the strongest form. So this also explains why there's these different levels of F1 geometry. Some of them are just very close to only being toric varieties, and others allow for more freedom. Because the things get a little bit more delicate when you want to have, say, what more your morphisms should be between varieties that have this type of torification. Because if you just really require them strictly to match torification, then you get a very restrictive type of morphism. Or you can require some weaker forms where you don't a priori fix the torification, but you say that there should exist two torifications for which the map is compatible. So and then some weaker form that your variety is a decomposition into pieces on which you have compatible torification. All this, so the weakest form is actually close to just being the decomposition of the Grothendieck class, basically. But And so, you know, you can get corresponding categories of torrified varieties with morphisms in these various forms. And again, you can do the same, play the same game that I was doing before. So to categorify this in terms of, you know, having some growth in the ring and a corresponding assembler and spectrum associated to these various forms of. So notice that these growth in the rings are much more restrictive than the usual ones, because necessarily these varieties are all in the Tate part of the growth in the ring, because they have to be decomposable into torrides. Okay, so this, as I said, is still work in progress. Part of this is, you know, trying to relate these special type of varieties that correspond to this torrification point of view on F1 geometry with this dynamical point of view by looking at endomorphism, what is that, that have this quasi-unipotent structure. And there's some interesting phenomena that happen when you look at this type of dynamical zeta functions for example, when you are in the positive characteristic case. There's a kind of divergence between the cohomological one, which is still rational, and the actual counting of points, which can give you things that are not rational. So there's several interesting phenomena that are going into that, and the relation with lambda rings. So this is kind of a second part of this work that's in preparation. Okay, so I'll finish with this. Actually, since my co-author is right there, maybe he has something to add to this.
I think the question was, what are the automorphisms of spec Z over spec F1?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, but I don't think...
It's not my question, I just...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that can be a interesting discussion by itself, but we can do that some other time.
Are there other questions on the other side?
I don't see any more questions here.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. So let's open up to questions on this side now. Yeah.
So you said that this one of the spectra that you produce is not very interesting, maybe for varieties with this endomorphism set, that Zagadari's words of unity. Does not very interesting mean it splits as a bunch of island plane spectra, or is it more?
You mean this this case? Of the and you mean for this case of the endomorphism, right? Yeah, I mean, so the reason why I was saying that the spectrum in this case is the homotopy theoretic spectrum in this case is not so interesting is because, you know, the kind of decompositions that you have if you do a growth in the ring like this. And for these varieties with an endomorphism, the way, the New Jerusalem way to do this is to, you know, have, so you look at pairs of a variety with an almost unipotent map, but the only reasonable addition you can take is these joint unions, because you want, I mean, you want this map to behave well on sums and products, at the map that gives you the spectrum. So you need the cohomology to just split. And so, but then if you just have, if your, you know, your decompositions in this Grothendieck ring are just disjoint unions, then topologically the spectrum is just not, you know, so interesting, right?
So not interesting means that it's, the homotopy type is boring, or that it's not useful for what you're trying to do?
Because in a sense, the point is, no, if you have a, like with the usual thing with the Grothendieck ring, right, is that you can have, you know, closed embeddings and complements, yeah, that split in okay. interesting ways. Here, all that's happening is that it's connected, it's picking a certain number of connected components
okay.
each time. So,
okay, cool, thanks.
Are there other questions from this side? Okay, so before breaking for lunch, and thanking the speaker again, I'd just like to remind you and people on the other side that we'll have these wormholes open, and specifically 2:30 here and 8:30 over there. We're hoping that people might be willing to have some interactions with those. So, all right.